So without further ado, let me first acknowledge my collaborators on this work in progress, whose completion I hopefully have not jinxed by listing an archive number for this month. This is a project in collaboration with Shamit and Andreas and Joe Polchinski and Eva Silverstein. And let me begin with just an outline of where we're going today. I'll present some condensed matter motivation for the holographic work that we'll do, particularly focusing on interesting features of heavy fermion systems. And from there, we'll talk a little bit about the use of ADS-CFT to model interesting condensed matter phenomenology, focusing on aspects that appear in the phase diagram of these heavy fermion systems. From there, we'll talk a little bit about generalities of holographic lattices and how they relate to the things that people actually study in condensed matter. We'll talk about a system that was written down, a lattice system in holography that was written down by Shamit and Andreas and Shoyeda about a year ago, a D3D5 system. And then we'll talk about a new lattice system that allows us to do the things that we want to do, namely to build a marginal Fermi liquid from holography. And then I'll conclude with some open questions and remaining work in progress. So here is a picture of some physics in a heavy fermion system. This is some ytterbium, rhodium, silicon compound. The ytterbium is fairly heavy, A around 70 or so, which is why this is called a heavy fermion system. And the microscopic structure of it is such that there's a lattice of these ytterbium atoms throughout this material. And what the axes in this picture represent are temperature going up and magnetic field going left to right. The color indicates the scaling of DC resistance. Blue is resistance going like T squared, which you may recall follows from Fermi's liquid theory, and orange like T, for which people don't know how to describe this effectively. I think these are three-dimensional, actually. Yeah. But they share some common features with the cuprates. In particular, there's this nice anomalous region, the orange region, where the material, the phase is out of a non-Fermi liquid. And this region displays some interesting anomalous thermodynamics. In particular, I'll talk about that in a minute, actually. That phase appears to be related to the existence of a quantum critical point right here. And there's a couple other interesting features in the physics of these systems. One is you notice here I have a Fermi liquid phase, there's a non-Fermi liquid phase, there's a phase transition in between them. There's a transition that radically reorganizes the Fermi surface here. And I mentioned the fact that there's an inherent lattice structure in these systems.
Is there any real transition, some singularity?
I believe it's a first order transition for many of these systems. Some of them it's a crossover. So a couple aspects of these non-Fermi liquid phases. People are able to measure the dynamical spin susceptibility, which is really the spin-spin two-point function, but the condensed matter people call these things dynamical susceptibilities, and they have a form that is roughly like this. This is at least a decent fit. Note the fact that this last term here only depends on omega. And they have some anomalous thermodynamics. The specific heat, like most fermionic systems, grows like temperature, but the coefficient of the specific heat grows from both sides near the critical magnetic field for the quantum critical point. And moreover, the DC resistivity goes like temperature. It's T linear, which is difficult to understand. That's a non-Fermi liquid phase. There's a particular case of a non-Fermi liquid phase that is known as a marginal Fermi liquid, and will be the subject of most of the talk today. And that is a system whose fermion-fermion two-point function at zero temperature has logarithmic singularity, like this. Sure.
What's the CFT?
It depends on the field content and the interactions of the CFT. So, for example, let's see, the DC resistivity in most CFTs goes like T to some higher power, if not like T. I don't remember off the top of my head what you get, but it's usually not T.
It's not fixed by.
It's not fixed by. Can,
I don't know.
Well, if you have no other parameters in your system other than a temperature, then the resistivity is an inverse conductivity. In the conductivity in 2 plus 1 dimensions is dimensionless, and in dimension 1 it's, in 3 plus 1 is dimension 1. So resistivity would have dimension minus 1 in 3 plus 1. So 1 over T. Or 0. So that concludes the condensed matter side of this. I'd like to spend most of the talk discussing holography and how we can get these things in holography. As most of you probably know, there's been a lot of attempts over the last 3 years now to model condensed matter phenomena using holographic duals. These include, for the features relevant in these systems, the behavior of non-Fermi liquids. One of the main ways people study this is with studying the correlation functions of fermionic operators dual to a charged fermion in the low temperature ADS-RN background. Another thing people study are quantum critical points in holographic systems. Most of these are found by adjusting ratios of charge densities and magnetic fields and things like this. There's also holographic superfluid transitions or multi-trace superfluid transitions at zero temperature that people find. And finally, if you want to find lattice configurations in ADS CFT, the easiest thing to do is to use some probe brain systems that Shamit and Andreas and Yo wrote down last year. And interestingly, these exhibit Fermi liquid, non-Fermi liquid transitions if you mess with them in the right way. But for now, let me focus a little bit on the non-Fermi liquids. They'll be relevant for most of this talk. A little over a year ago, Tom Faulkner and Joe Polchinski distilled the essence of how people were finding non-Fermi liquid physics from ADS-CFT. And what they did was they wrote down a purely an effective field theory that reproduces the correlators of these bulk calculations at low energies. And the idea of this effective theory is simply to mix a free fermion with its own Fermi surface with a fermion in a large N 0 plus 1 DCFT, some conformal quantum mechanics, and to just simply mix it. And if I was using condensed matter language, I might say that the free fermion is some conduction electron, and the big psi of the 0 plus 1D theory is some locally critical fermion. Well, the two-point functions of these fermions are known, the free fermion, obviously we know, and the fermion of the 0 plus 1D theory, its two-point function is completely determined by conformal invariance through its operator dimension. Now, if the 0 plus 1D theory is a large N theory, we can compute the exact two-point function of, say, little psi, just via a geometric series, and you get this interesting result, which looks very similar to the spin susceptibility that I wrote down a couple slides ago. Notice that there's the usual Fermi liquid term, and then another piece with some anomalous scaling of temperature that's only a function of omega over T. It's only a function of omega over T reflecting that the sector that you're coupling to is locally critical. Now, this two-point function displays three interesting features. First, for when the dimension of this fermion is less than or equal to 1, so when that fermionic operator is relevant, this last term dominates this last term dominates this term at small omega over t, giving you the two-point function of some non-Fermi liquid. By definition, it's not a Fermi liquid. However, for delta bigger than 1, this term dies at very small omega over t relative to this one. So you just get a Fermi liquid back again. For non-zero temperature, in fact, these functions match the non-Fermi liquid susceptibility that some people see, provided that you establish a map between the Z, the dynamical critical exponent, and the delta of the fermionic operator in the locally critical theory. But there's an interesting borderline case in between relevant and irrelevant where the fermion is just marginal, in which case the two-point function in the infrared theory at zero temperature degenerates. It acquires a log, which then gives you this form of a two-point function, which is what I said was a marginal Fermi liquid. This tells us that there's a very simple way of obtaining a marginal Fermi liquid. That is simply to mix free fermions with some large N locally critical ones. It's easy to get the free fermions. It's a little bit harder to get locally critical large N fermions. But we can write down a way of getting these through some holographic dual. Since it's a conformal quantum mechanics, if it has a dual, that dual lives in ADS2. Now we can ask, in string theory, what are different ways that we can get an ADS2 geometry? Sure.
In critical fermions, there was a delta function. What did you really assume? Like, how many defects or
what I'm really assuming is that in order to get this, I'm assuming that the freely propagating fermion couples to a different copy of the CFT at each point in space.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that gives me a translationally invariant theory. Yeah. So it's weird, but that's how you get this. And the way that most people end up getting an ADS2 is to study the low temperature limit of various finite density systems in ADS-CFT, notably including the ADS-RN black hole, whose geometry roughly interpolates between an ADS-2 region at some non-zero temperature near the black hole horizon and ADS-D plus 1 up near the boundary. And the way this works, of course, is with the radial electric field. It's also worth noting, because it's cute, that you also get an effective ADS2 on the world volume of probe brains at non-zero density. Leads to some interesting physics. There's one more calculation I'd like to talk about before going on, and that is a nice one-loop bulk calculation in the ADS-RN background by the MIT group, where they computed the one-loop correction to the connectivity or the resistivity in the boundary theory arising from these bulk fermions, bulk charged fermions. And what they find is that if I have some bulk fermion with dimension in this infrared theory less than or equal to 1, this gives a contribution to the resistivity that goes like t to the 2 delta minus 1, which for, I should have said, I didn't say it, for delta equals 1, in this case, it gives you a marginal Fermi liquid, gives you T linear resistivity, which is exactly what people see in experiments. So it's interesting.
That would be a contribution.
Oh. Say again?
You said this would be a contribution.
The resistivity, but yes. It dominates in the appropriate place?
Well, depends on the details of your system. So for an honest holographic system, a string theory embedded, there's lots of different fermions, and if you have any fermions whose dimension is lower than 1 in addition, with reasonably sized couplings, those will contribute lower, smaller powers of T that will dominate the low T physics. So this is specifically for a setup where the lowest dimension fermion, charge fermion, is delta equals 1, but also, let's see, maybe just leave it at that. And this is a one-loop calculation. So they did this for some probe fermion, where you imagine its coupling is ordered 1 over n, 1 over n squared. So this is very small for them compared to the connectivity of the boundary theory before adding the probe fermion. Are there any questions before I go on? Okay, we'll keep going. So make just a brief checklist. How did we do with this system to compare it with what physics of these heavy fermion systems, just for fun? Well, the semi-holographic theories display a non-Fermi liquid with some anomalous transport. That's wonderful. They're obviously related to quantum criticality insofar as there's an ADS2 related to a conformal theory. However, they don't have a Fermi liquid phase, so there doesn't appear to be a Fermi liquid, non-Fermi liquid transition in these systems. And moreover, there's no underlying lattice. But actually, there's more sicknesses in these theories than such a checklist would indicate. The main one that I want to focus on is the fact that the ADS-RM black holes have a huge number of instabilities in a number of different directions. And let's talk about one for just a minute, and then I'll go on to talk about these probe ring lattice systems. One instability of these ADS-RM black holes is to scalar condensation. These are holographic superfluids that we know and love. The way this works, if you've never seen this before, is that this geometry right here, if I take a charged scalar field in ADS and I turn on this electric field giving me a density in the boundary theory, the mass squared of the scalar field is not the same in the ADS2 as it was in the original ADS. In fact, its mass squared is given by this value there, which for relatively low mass squared, but still stable mass squared in the ADS, or for large charge, this mass in the ADS2 falls below the Brighton-Lohner-Friedman bound, and so that field will condense at low T. That, and what people have seen, that's your superfluid transition, but moreover, if you look at very, very low temperatures, what you find is that the condensing scalar field completely wipes out the charged black hole. The black hole horizon shrinks to zero size. You have some ADS to, say, ADS domain wall geometry, say ADS4 to ADS4, where the charge scalar carries all the charge that the black hole carried. So you completely destroy ADS2 in this way. And you might say, well, if we could design our holographic setup to suit our ends, perhaps we could pick one with few charged scalars that were sufficiently heavy that we had no superfluid instability. But in all of the examples for which we have an honest map to the boundary theory, there's lots of supersymmetry, lots of light charged scalars, lots of instabilities. So in lieu of those and many other shortcomings that I'm not talking about, let me give a list of goals for today. The first is to obtain a new class of non-Fermi liquids from holography. Another way of saying this is to find a way of stably embedding ADS2 in some holographic example. And if we do this in string theory, well, then presumably we can write down the Lagrangian for the boundary theory, semi-holographically mix in some fermions so that we have a Lagrangian description for this marginal Fermi liquid. And moreover, by writing down some string embedding, we'll have fixed all of the choices for the operator dimensions, the content of all of these charged fermions. And moreover, to make contact with these heavy fermion systems, it would be cute if we could also realize Fermi liquid, non-Fermi liquid transitions in these systems, and maybe even connect to these lattice models. like to do that all at once for fun. And I should note, actually, that there's a way forward here. That is to note that 2 and 3 were already done with these interesting probrain lattice systems, which gives us a candidate technique for doing all of these things at once, namely with probrain lattices. So that's the plan. Since we're going to be talking about lattices, I should talk briefly about what condensed matter people actually study with lattice models. And when they look at lattice models for heavy fermion systems, there's a class of these lattices called the Kondo lattice theories. And so let me give you a brief overview of those before moving on to our holographic ones. The Kondo lattice starts off with some lattice of heavy defects. These are the heavy fermions of the localized in our system. And these have some spin degrees of freedom localized at their sites. There's some non-local interaction between defects, and there's also some propagating electrons that have interactions with defect sites through things like hopping parameters and such. And we can imagine tuning J to some quantum critical point, the spin-spin couplings, in order to realize some locally critical theory. There's an upgrade for this system that you might consider, and that is to take the defects and make them charged, add a photon. That's something that people study. And then there's the upgrade that we have to do in order to use holography, which is a double upgrade where we make the defects charged and supersymmetric. We add some localized hypermultiplets at the defects. And moreover, instead of a photon, we have some propagating SUN field plus all of its superpartners. And we'll end up using maximally supersymmetric theories because that's what we can study easily. And if we want to do this in holography, then we should not only consider the supersymmetric Kondo model, but we should also turn on large N. So that's the thing that we can study. Very, very loosely related to the real Kondo model. Well, there's a brain setup that was originally written down by Camino, Paredes, and Ramalho that allows us to do this, and that is an 8ND D3, D5 intersection. And so I've written down the 10D weak coupling flat space picture embeddings for these brains, the D3s in the usual directions, and the D5s just living in time, arranged in some lattice in the 1, 2, and 3 directions of the D3 brain theory, and then spread out in 4 through 8. In the usual holographic limits, this brain setup will give us type 2B strings on ADS5, process 5, plus a lattice of D5 brains wrapping cycles that we can just read off by looking at this. They will wrap ADS2 cross S4 cycles. Note the ADS2, which, since the system is supersymmetric, isn't stable, unlike the ADS-RM black holes. And what is the field theory for this? This is N equals 4 super Yang mils plus lattice fermions. Since it's an 8ND system, it's just fermions at each of the lattice sites. And if we just add a single D5 brain, this system preserves 8 supercharges. If we add more, we can preserve up to 8, depending on how we orient the various D5s. And if you look at this and you've worked with probe brain systems, you might complain that it shouldn't be stable. You looked at it and you didn't know about the supersymmetry because the slipping mode, the mass word of an S4 slipping in an S5 is -4, which is well below the BF bound in ADS2. But that naive instability is actually stabilized by mixing with the gauge field living on the D5 brain via Wessamino term. That's nice. So what is the brain embedding for this? The D5, if you look at this, the D5 wraps an S4 at some constant theta and can vary that theta. It doesn't just have to be the equatorial S4. You can wrap a different one if you're also willing to turn on a field strength in the ADS2 part of the world volume. corresponding to some density of flavor fermions in the boundary theory. Well, what are the symmetries of the problem? Their brain wraps in SO4, so there's some internal SO5 symmetry. And if I look at the fields living on one brain, there's also an SO3 corresponding to the transverse directions inside of ADS5. And we can look at how various fields on the probe brain decompose under those symmetries, how they transform under those symmetries. There's the ADS scalars. Those will transform as a 3 under SO3. I can turn on some SO5 spherical harmonics, and I'll find that the operator dimension of the dual operator is just L. And, well, as I said before, the slipping mode mixes with the ADS2 gauge field, and you can, well, and these also transform as an L under SO5. They don't transform under SO3. And they give you operator dimensions L and L plus 4. The lower one, the dimension L1, you can think of as being dual to psi bar x to the L psi, where the x are the usual n equals 4 super Yang Mills scalars. But of course, so now we get back to the goal of finding a marginal Fermi liquid, not just a non-Fermi liquid. We would like to find a system where there's a fermionic operator whose dimension in the ADS2 is 1. Unfortunately, for this system, all the fermionic superpartners of these operators have dimension L plus a half plus an integer by supersymmetry. So no delta equals 1 in the spectrum, which is sad for this point of view, but on the positive side, we have a new way of getting stable ADS2, at least in the probe limit.
It doesn't have to be ADS2. It could be the flavor fields could be massive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. So you can turn on a source. So for L plus 4, you can't turn on a source. But for L, you can turn on a dimension 1 source so that the brain slips on the sphere. You'll have the same spectroscopy, obviously, in the UV, but I don't know what the brain embeddings look like on hand.
Translation of
invariance
is broken, right?
Yes.
So how is supersymmetry?
How is which symmetry?
Supersymmetry.
There's still the supercharge is decomposed. There's the ones that preserve that the ones that you can write down some linear combination of supercharges that just anti-commute down to time derivatives instead of spatial derivatives, giving you some super conformal quantum mechanics. So that's where the supersymmetry is. Okay. Let me show you a picture for this system too. If we're willing to break all supersymmetry and put down a lattice not just of D5 brains but anti-D5s as well, we can add a Fermi liquid phase to this theory. And the picture for this is, say that I have these D5 brains embedded in the ADS black hole background. There's a horizon. There's only two-dimensional parameters in that system. There's the temperature of the black brain, and then there's the separation between lattice sites, which I can combine into a single dimensionless parameter, R times T. At high R times T, in the high temperature phase, well, the preferred embedding for these brains is simply to hang straight down to the horizon. That gives me the non-Fermi liquid phase. So I have fermions propagating in an ADS2 world volume. However, if I look at the low temperature phase, small RT, then just like the ordinary Wilson loops in ADS, the phase with a lower free energy is for the D5s to match up with the anti-D5s, like such. Which, since these brains terminate outside they turn around outside the horizon, that theory is gapped. Excitations on the brain world volume have to have a finite energy in order to propagate. And, well, if you write down the two-point functions in that theory, look at them at low energy, you find that that's the Fermi liquid phase. And consequently, there's a transition as you go in between. That is a non-Fermi liquid, Fermi liquid transition, whose order parameter is the condensate dual to the slipping mode, psi bar psi. Sure.
Brain matches to which energy?
So it depends on the details of your lattice. If you have a lattice where the brains are equally spaced, like I attempted to draw here, then, well, it's a classic example of spontaneous symmetry breaking. The D5s and anti-D5s will link up in some way that will end up breaking some of the symmetry. So for example, I could, this one and this one here could link up, this one here could link up, and if my lattice continues, I could repeat that and preserve some, well, discrete translational invariance in this direction and this direction, or it could cool down into this type of case and break all lattice symmetries.
You're still at finite temperature, so
yeah.
So you should.
Yeah,
that's the main entropy that is contributing from choosing different ways of.
That's right. Yeah, I think. I can check. I don't remember if the. So the this was analyzed in Andreas' paper with Shamit and Cho. And I. They looked at this aspect, but I don't remember their results. And I'll take a look at that and get back to you.
Oh, sorry.
Sure.
Good phase above 1.0. If you have a gapped phase, is there a Fermi surface?
I believe there is a Fermi surface in this system. Thank you. I see what you're saying. That's an apparent contradiction. Now I remember. Okay, this is a gap phase. But now, if I semi-holographically couple these fermions living on the brain world volume to a free fermion with its own Fermi surface, then you get a Fermi liquid phase. This is there any shock in here?
Yes.
Oh. This fermion-fermion two-point function, when you semi-holographically couple the free fermions with the ADS2 ones, this, when this is gapped, this just, sorry, the when in the Fermi liquid phase, this just goes to zero, I believe, at omega equals zero. No, it should go to constant. Yeah, I've confused myself now. I think it goes to zero rather than to, I should check this. I don't remember offhand. I remember the final result that you end up getting the ADS2 excitations are gapped, but when you semi-holographically couple it, then you get a Fermi liquid. Because this dies relative to this. Sorry. Okay. Let's compare briefly with our goals to compare with the heavy fermion systems. We've obtained a new class of non-Fermi liquids from holography. We've stabilized ADS2. This is good. We've realized Fermi liquid, non-Fermi liquid transitions up to my poor memory. And we've also connected to lattice models, but unfortunately we didn't find a marginal Fermi liquid in this way because of supersymmetry. And so what I'd like to talk about for the rest of this talk is this problem of writing down some new lattice model, some new holographic lattice model that gives me the spectrum that I want. And it also will give a new holographic lattice model, which will be interesting for other applications as well. But for now, just focus on finding this delta equals 1. Let me make a brief note before going on. As I said earlier, you can get ADS2 on the world volume of probe brains at finite density. So this would be a way of getting ADS2 from probe brains without a lattice at all. The way this works is that the open string metric on the D brain at very, very small, close to the Poincaré horizon, looks like an ADS2. So fields propagating on the world volume see an ADS2 in the deep infrared. And as a consequence, the small omega, small k two-point functions for fields on the brain world volume are precise, are very, very similar to what they are in ADSRN, except the transverse directions, the RN transverse to the ADS2, is different in the probe brain theory. So the dimensions of dual operators in the don't depend on wave number in this infrared theory. It's interesting. I find it interesting and still looking at this. But in contrast with what we're talking about today, in order to get this ADS2, you have to turn on some charge density that breaks supersymmetry. There's no lattice. It's a little bit harder to get pure Fermi liquids this way. A little bit harder to make contact with these heavy fermion systems, but still interesting and should be pursued, I think. Let's talk about a new lattice system. Instead of D3, D5, let's consider a lattice in 2A, namely a D2, D2 system, where the D2s are arranged in the color D2s are arranged in 0, 1, 2 directions, and the probe D2s in a few different ones, such that they live in time, but they form a lattice in the spatial directions of the color theory. This is a 4ND system, so this time we've not just added fermions at the lattice site, but we've added hypermultiplets, with scalars, preserves the same amount of supersymmetry as before. If I add one D2 brain, I preserve 8 supercharges. I can break the rest depending on how I orient the lattice. And the field theory for this is N equals 8 superyang nulls living on the color brains, plus some fundamental hypers at the defects. And if I look at the symmetries of this problem, I should note that I have a U1 in the 3-4 directions and an SO5 in the 5-9 directions, manifest in the brain embedding and therefore in the field theory. And also nice is that with this amount of supersymmetry and SO5 symmetry, the Coulomb branch metric for the theory is not renormalized beyond one loop, something that'll be useful a little bit later. If I just have a single D2 brain, I should note that there's also an additional U1 symmetry in the 1-2 directions that's broken in the presence of a lattice to whatever's left. So part of, and just to put some meat on this, part of the action on these defects, the Higgs branch part of it that's exact, is a usual coupling to the time component of the N equals 8 gauge field, as well as some coupling to N equals 8 scalars in an SO5 invariant fashion. There's 5 scalars it couples to. Well, N equals 8 superyang nulls is not conformal, flows to some infrared fixed point where the full SO8 R symmetry of the theory becomes manifest, and that is described by, well, M2 brains up in M theory. So this system will flow to some other system in M theory, an M2-M2 intersection that is just like this. And if I then take the large N limit of this system, I'll find M2 probe brains on ADS4 across S7, And those M2 probes will, again, wrap ADS2 cycles. This is another way of realizing a stable ADS2. Moreover, the global symmetry of this theory is enhanced from SO5 to SO6. Now, it's an easy exercise to compute the spectrum of fluctuations on the probe brain. It gives you the flavor operators in the dual theory. Well, and the one thing you should remember for this is that the world volume action for an M2 brain doesn't have a gauge field like the D brain actions do. Rather, you have this additional transverse scalar in the M3 circle direction that dualizes into a gauge field when you look at the D2 brain action. So there's only geometric fluctuations, and these decompose into two classes. Do you fluctuate in the ADS directions or in the transverse directions? The ADS ones are a singlet under the SO6. They transform under the U1 in the ADS directions. I can turn on some spherical harmonic in the 3-4, and they have dimensions L over 2 minus 1. Notably, though, the transverse scalars transform as a 6 under SO6, have dimension L over 2 plus a half. Well, and now say that we want to do the operator matching for this theory. Match these fluctuations to the operators in the N equals 8 plus flavor. To do that matching, we should really look at the SO5 part of the SO6 so that we can match to the manifest global symmetries of the N equals 8 theory. The 6 decomposes. Under that SO5, the flavor scalars are neutral, but the flavor fermions are 4. And our claim is that the 5 is dual to psi bar phi to the L psi. That's consistent with the dimensions of that's consistent with all the isometries of the problem, the symmetries of the problem. But if you look at this, you'll note that the free field dimension of this operator is L over 2, not L over 2 plus a half. And what we find is that we can consistently assign operators provided that we shift the dimensions of the flavor fields in such a way that the flavor fermion has dimension 1/4, flavor scalar has dimension minus 1/4. Recall that in 0 plus 1, the engineering dimensions are respectively 0 and minus 1/2 for these. And we have some nice way of interpreting this. We go back to this Higgs branch action. If we suppose that the flavor fermions have their engineering dimension, then the kinetic term is marginal, as it always should be. But since the N equals 8 scalars have dimension 1/2, this term is actually relevant. It has dimension 1/2. So in the flavor sector, the theory flows to some new fixed point where the N equals 8 scalars still have dimension 1/2, but the flavor fermions each have dimension 1/4, so that this is relevant, and that makes this irrelevant. So that works. And rather than analyzing fermionic fluctuations on the M2 brain, which I'd rather not do, we use supersymmetry to then say that the operator dimensions of the superpartners of these operators are just L over 2 plus 1, which you'll note for L equals 0 gives us a dimension 1 fermion. It's wonderful. These transform as a 4 of SO5, and so we can also write down some candidate operator for these fluctuations, for these operators, just psi bar phi to the L time derivative of the flavor scalar plus Hermitian conjugate. And that has dimension L over 2 plus 1, provided that we make the shift of operator dimensions. Okay, so we've succeeded in finding non-Fermi liquids, realizing these transitions, and we found a marginal Fermi liquid. That worked very nicely. And there's lots of other things we can do with this lattice theory. The questions that we're attacking now, though, are we'd like to see if we can go beyond telegraphy. So far, we've worked in the probe limit, where the number of colors is much, much bigger than the number of flavors. It would be interesting if to see if we need this probe limit at all, in order to find this marginal Fermi liquid. So can we make any statements about the N order NF, order one, order large theory? Those are the questions we have left. And there's two parts of this. And one is the use of supersymmetry and non-renormalization theorems in the field theory to answer these questions. And the other, there's a holographic approach, and that is to consider the Veneziano limit, where NF is order N. What does the dual geometry look like? Compute the fluctuations on top of that geometry. Are there any questions before I finish up here? Okay. Particularly useful for this first point, using non-renormalization theorems, is the fact that we have a Lagrangian description of the infrared fixed point of N equals 8. And that is the ABJM theory at Chern-Simons level 1. So where does this come from? You may recall that the ABJM theory is in general some N equals 6 quiver Chern-Simons matter theory whose supersymmetry is enhanced at k equals 1 and 2 to N equals 8. And for k equals 1, gives you it's another description of the fixed point of N equals 8 super Yang nils. This theory is a Chern-Simons matter theory, so it has some matter, some bifundamental chirals that are rotated under the SO6R symmetry of the theory. And you can engineer that theory with a brain setup in 2B, whose lift up to M theory is just that of M2 brains probing C4 mod ZK, which for K equals 1 is exactly the same setup that we were looking at before. Well, what does the M2-M2 intersection look like in terms of the ABJM theory? There's a way you can get this. If we add some probe D3 brains in the 2B description that wrap around the 6 circle, as well as live in time and wrap the 3-4 directions, then the Munich people have told us that this lifts up to the same M2-M2 intersection that I wrote down before. Not just for K equals 1, but for general K. Notably, this brain embedding in 2B, the D3 brains wrap all the way around the 6 circle, which means that they split on the NS and 1K brains, which means that they add flavor to both of the gauge groups of ABJM. So we add flavors to both gauge groups. There's some issues with global symmetry. The manifest global symmetry of ABJM is not the full SO8. It's an SU4 cross U1, which at the level of the superpotential, you only see an SU2 cross SU2, which means that our probe brain theory, the manifest global symmetry in the Lagrangian, will break from SO6, which is the full symmetry, down to SU2 cross some U1s. Makes it a little bit harder to do matchings. But there's an advantage in all of this, in that not only do we have a Lagrangian description of the bulk theory now, but we also have this extra knob, this Chern-Simons term, this Chern-Simons level, which we can dial in order to make the bulk theory as weakly coupled as we would like. You may recall that the Tuft coupling of Chern-Simons theory is N, the rank of the gauge group, over K. If we take K very, very, very large, there's some hope that maybe we can study some weakly interacting marginal Fermi liquid through all of this mess. And you can take all of the work that was shown before for the spectrum on these probes, and you can write it in terms of, for the case of K not equal to 1. And what you find is exactly the same spectrum decomposed under the new symmetries of the bomb. But it's the same spectrum. It's K-independent. And, well, a nice feature of this, too, is that if you write down the candidate operators dual to these fluctuations, the candidates that are consistent with the symmetries of the problem are also consistent with the free field dimensions, which makes sense insofar as we could turn K to be as small as we want, as large as we want, go to a weakly coupled theory where these operators should have their free field dimensions. So that makes sense. And of course, we still get a delta equals 1 fermion for K equals 1, but by doing the analyzing the spectrum, you see that it's delta equals 1 for all K. If I take K large, but the Atuf coupling to still be large as well, then we have a type 2A description of this lattice theory as well, in terms of D2 brain probes in the ADS4 cross CP3 geometry, which is cute. And also, in this limit, you find the same spectrum as for small k up in M theory. So in the last few minutes here, that's sort of the where we're at right now. And that discussion is going to provide the raw material to answer some of our remaining questions that we have in the theory. One is, do these lattice degrees of freedom that we have, do they induce local criticality for the bulk fields, the fields of the ABJM theory? So that's something that we're currently studying. Or alternatively, do the bulk fields trigger a flow such that the low energy theory, or the theory for n order nf, is actually Lorentz invariant? If they induce local criticality for the bulk fields, well, that's interesting in and of itself. It's also interesting for this Lagrange business of a marginal Fermi liquid, insofar as you would get a marginal Fermi liquid for n order 1. And moreover, we'd still like to study the, I think Shamet's looking at this with a couple of his students and a postdoc, looking at the bulk geometry and the Veneziano limit. And then there's this final question, if I go look at this theory in the small Atuf coupling limit, can I obtain a marginal Fermi liquid by semi-holographically mixing that theory with a free fermion? That's where we'd like to go. However, we've done enough that we're writing a short paper on that. These new holographic non-Fermi liquid phases, Lagrangian description of marginal Fermi liquid, all these interesting transitions, and most notably, stabilizing ADS2 with supersymmetry. That's the punchline of all this. And that's all I have, so thank you for listening. Are there any questions?